The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
In a moment, we'll be talking about the banning of grid girls from Formula One, walk-on girls from the darts and other sports. We'll also be hearing about the idea of banning smoking from all public outdoor areas following in the wake of Carlow Institute of Technology. But we're going to start with a story from the courts this afternoon. We have Larissa Nolan, the journalist, with us, and Ian Power, director of spunout.ie. Larissa, tell us a little bit about the acquittal of a man who had been accused of spraying homophobic graffiti and swastikas on Dublin's most celebrated gay bar, the George.
Okay, so Owen Barclay was before the courts for carrying out homophobic graffiti attack. It's kind of hard to say on the George, saying "faggots out" on the sprayed it all over the front of it. I don't know if you remember the pictures.
The pictures still are online this afternoon. Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't really. You have to see it them. Happens. So have a look and see them, because it's quite astounding looking what he has done.
It's shocking to see the swastika as well.
That's it.
On the done in chalk, but still there, quite visible on the front of the George, which I think for many people, for a wider community, was made famous by the fact, I think Vincent Brown did TV3's coverage of the marriage equality referendum, the results day, from inside in the George.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, obviously it's completely associated. It's probably the most well-known gay bar in Ireland, but it has to be. So this was chosen, obviously, for this attack. He was before the courts, the district court, and he was cleared on of criminal damage on a technicality. So it appears that, you know, despite evidence of barmen and despite CCTV footage and such like, there was some sort of technicality. A few errors, I think it would be probably the right way to say it, before the court. For example, the wrong barman, a barman was named on the court files, but he was a different guy who turned up
to give evidence.
So for these things are always, anything tiny like this, of course, in a court, immediately it's thrown out. If you have a good lawyer, or even any kind of decent lawyer, he's going to pick up on something like that and get you off, which is his job. And he did that job, you know, in this case.
Now, the reports, Ian Power from spunout.ie, in relation to this, suggest that this man, he was wearing a raccoon onesie when he was arrested shortly after the attack. He's been getting psychiatric and psychological treatment. But it does seem that it was a complete mess made of the prosecution, and we have to be careful in who we blame for that.
Of course, and I mean, as Larissa has said, you know, there's obviously a lot of very good defence solicitors out there, and that's their job, is to try to argue the technicalities. I think it's frustrating because as a member of the LGBT community, the George and maybe the Panty Bar are the two kind of well-known gay bars, and they're meant to be, for the LGBT community, particularly those who might not be out yet, refuges and places that are safe. So when you see those places being attacked, it does actually, you know, affect everybody. And I remember the morning in particular, you know, it was circulating widely on Twitter, and, you know, a lot of people, particularly younger people who may not have actually experienced this type of hate before, you know, directed at their local kind of gay bar, were subjected to it kind of for the first time. And it is traumatic, and it is distressing. So to see the man responsible for it be acquitted today, despite the fact that he actually admitted to it, apparently, in a Garda interview, is quite frustrating, I imagine, for many people. Also, the fact that he was brought up on a criminal damage charge, as opposed to us having any sort of offence in relation to hate crimes.
You would wonder, could it have been looked at with incitement to hatred? But I think, ultimately, with this one, you know, I wouldn't feel sorry so much for people who are celebrating their sexuality in the George. You know, I would feel more sorry for a guy who's walking around in a raccoon onesie and who thinks that it's normal to paint, you know, hate words on a bar. You know, that's the person, I think, is, you know, he has to live with himself. So that'll be the worst for me.
I wonder how much of a conscience he has about it. Okay, let's move on to other things. And Ian, number of sports have women as almost like ornaments, would almost be maybe that the wrong expression to use, but, you know, boxing, where you have women who carry around the number of the next round, darts, which has just banned what they call the walk-on girls, or the walk-in girls who accompany the male players to the Orchard to play darts. And you have now Formula One. It has been decided to get rid of the grid girls. Tell us a little bit about the decision, why it's happened.
Sure. So Formula One has decided to axe its grid girls. And I think everyone's pretty familiar with them after decades of employing women to parade around, as they say, the pit lane and the starting grid. So you'd probably remember them most. They would have been doing a lot of promotional tasks, so including wearing clothes with the brand names of the sponsors and appearing on the track before races, and also around the podium when the top three were receiving their prizes after the Grand Prix. So what they've decided to do from their perspective, the American owners of the Formula One franchise, Liberty Media, have said that the practice no longer represents its brand values. And as you say, this comes just after the Darts bosses said that walk-on girls would be scrapped from their sport as well. This is interesting because, I mean, you know, there are similar people involved in UFC in sports that have kind of come to prominence over the last couple of years. So it seems that some of the more old school sports are starting to drop it, which is quite interesting. It has received a bit of a backlash, particularly from those who have been former grid girls. So model Kelly Brook was one of them. And I think people would remember her. I think she was also a judge on Britain's Got Talent and things like that. So she's described the job as one of the best that she's ever had. And she feels aggrieved that other women will now no longer have the opportunity to do it.
Larissa, this is becoming around the fact that these women are saying this is political correctness gone mad, that they're entering into these contracts of employment, which they don't regard as being sleazy in any way, totally on their own terms, and they've been denied it by the shrill comments of other women.
Well, I mean, this is the thing, is people are saying this is a victory for feminism, I suppose. Now, you can say that if these girls were redirected into other jobs, but I haven't seen any evidence yet from the reports that they're going to be working anywhere else. Now, I've actually seen these girls a lot myself because I'm a MotoGP fan, and I travel around Europe, or at least I did when I had more opportunity to do so. I used to travel around Europe watching them, watching all my favourite MotoGP stars like Valentino Rossi and all those kind of people, Casey Stoner, and they'd always have this glamorous looking girl beside them. Now, I'll be honest about it, right? I used to think it was ridiculous. I used to think, why are they concentrating so much on their hair and their makeup and looking like nice dolly birds with their umbrella beside this excellent racing guy? And, you know, why aren't they maybe making more of their interest? You know, doing something more interesting with it. Like, for example, we had brilliant people like Susie Perry. Do you remember that excellent MotoGP, or was she Formula 1
not
commentator?
Not a sport I know anything about. Okay.
So, Susie Perry and our own Catherine Thomas did it for the MotoGP. And they were all brilliant, dynamic women, really intelligent, knew their sport. I thought they were a lot better at representing women in this area. So I would love to see, I'm not sorry to see them gone. I'd like to see them redirected though.
Yeah, because even things like cycling does the same, I think, in the Tour de France. And there is a certain degree of cycling objectifying women, isn't it? I mean, you have to look a certain way, dress a certain way, and you're there for what purpose, really?
That's what I would have thought. And when you hear me saying that, to be honest, I'm not usually the person who stands up for anything, but when you hear me saying that, then it must be bad. So yeah, I thought it was real dolly bird stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think the overall issue is here, nobody has an overall objection to the grid girls idea. It's the fact that the place for women in these sports is that role and that role only. So, you know, if you were able to see women reaching the pinnacle of the sport as competitors, maybe, you know, in darts and in Formula One and in, you know, we see it a little bit more in UFC and other sports, I think then that's when the juxtaposition becomes less obvious and less offensive to both men and women, when women have the equal opportunity to be celebrated for something more than just their looks. And I think that's the issue that many people have with this type of activity.
Okay, Carnot Institute of Technology is looking to ban smoking from all outdoor areas except for three sort of open sheds. What do you make of this, Larissa? The idea is that apparently the entire campus, could this be extended to all of our third level institutions, hospitals, every other public space?
I think it should be banned everywhere. I think we should just outlaw smoking completely, make it illegal. It, you know, comes something so toxic that kills so many, and you have to walk by people and they blow smoke into your face, and then you have kids bringing them along the street and they're looking at people smoking. No, I think absolutely.
Hang on, were you ever a smoker?
I would say that I was a social smoker when I was younger and was less worldly wise. One thing that I would say that I regret in my life, I don't do regrets, but actually that social smoking would be something that I would have regretted. And I just think that it's something that it's very culturally, it's like something that, you know, when it's culturally accepted, it's done. When it's not culturally accepted, it's not done. So I think that this would be something that eventually will lead to progress and possibly less smokers. Even though I think, will people give out about it or will they be happy? Because I think even smokers don't like too much opportunity to smoke. Would that not be the case?
Hold on, it's less and less opportunity. I mean, it's going to be only in your own back garden or your own balcony of an apartment is the only place that people are going to be allowed to smoke in future.
Well,
they'll even be banned from smoking in their own homes if you continue in this path.
They're banned from smoking in cars where there are children present. So, I mean, you know, I think it is a good move, because what it does do is it prompts people to consider their own smoking behaviour. Because when it becomes so difficult that you have to walk a kilometre to get to the edge of campus to be able to light up, I think it starts to focus the mind in terms of the quitting and actually being a motivating factor. So fair play to Carlo IT. I think it's really good to
hold on. Gustin Mead says, could you get a more PC left-wing liberal nonsense in this discussion? Ban this, ban that, the opposite of freedom.
Well, I think this is a really good one, because what it's doing is it's restricting the use of tobacco on campus. It's not saying to people you can't smoke, although Larissa has a...
I think it just be gotten rid of altogether, but I'm interested in the texter there saying ban this, ban that is liberal. Is that what liberal is now?
Okay, listener says, I work in the University of Limerick and smoking and vaping is banned on the grounds.
Yep,
okay.
So Trinity has it done, UCC has it done. So Carlo IT are following, and at Lone IT, I think we're the first to actually do it originally. So they're following in the footsteps of a number of different campuses. So I imagine, just like hospitals, most hospitals now, you have to smoke in a designated area outside the hospital grounds, except for psychiatric patients, where there are some different situations there. So I think it's a good thing. I think the more of it, because tobacco kills, and you know, the less people we have smoking, the better.
Oh, Jack and Satri says, the women who work as grid girls and the girls who parade around the boxing ring holding the numbers aren't forced to do these jobs. They do them by choice. Feminism is anything but liberating women. It's attempting to suppress women's choices and actually advocates ultra-conservative regressiveness.
And she's right there, in fairness.
I think Jack might be a man. Just knowing from previous texts that he has sent in. And I want to ask you about Snowflake getting into the Oxford Dictionary.
Indeed. So mansplaining, ransomware and snowflake are among some of the words that have been added to the Oxford English Dictionary this year, including hangry as well, which has been around for a while. And it appears that...
Explain that one to me.
Hangry is when someone is bad-tempered or irritable because of as a result of hunger.
Just go and eat something. stop making life miserable for the rest of us.
I used to have a colleague who I won't name, but who used to get particularly hangry at about 4 o'clock every afternoon. So we used to have to throw snacks at him. But it's really interesting. So to qualify, apparently, for the list, the Oxford English Dictionary requires a number of independent examples of a word being used and evidence that it's been used for a reasonable amount of time. So researchers were actually able to trace the first use of the phrase mansplain to a web forum in an exchange between a man and a woman back in 2008, which is where it's got its qualifying genes for being included in the dictionary.
Yeah, snowflake, of course. I thought snowflake was one of these things which you weren't allowed to say because it's an alt-right thing, Larissa.
Well, I mean, I wonder when you look up the definition of snowflake. When you look up the definition, do you get, people aged between 26 and 34 who haven't been hit by real life yet? You know, because that, you know, that in fairness is what it is. I think snowflakes are kind of cute because it's like, you know, they've lived in this wonderful cosseted life for so long that, you know, suddenly real life starts creeping up on them and they're kind of, bravely battering it. No, you know, people can't say offensive things. People aren't allowed to be mean to me. So I think it's kind of, it's a sort of a life stage, the snowflake. And then when you get to 35, bang, it's over. You're no longer a snowflake.
I think snowflakes are really refreshing because for those of us who may become jaded, their naivety is actually challenging us to maybe be a little bit less cynical.
Absolutely.
Ian Power and Larissa Nolan, stay with us. A couple of comments coming in. Get off your high horse about smoking, says one. Peter in Tullamore says he's going to smoke a cigar in protest of what he's listening to. But another listener says the stupid phenomenon that is vaping needs to be banned also. Big reaction to our piece on the banning of smoking on various campuses, public spaces, third level colleges. Hey, drinking kills us much as smoking. Why not ban alcohol as well? The pubs will only sell milk from now on, says one listener. Yeah, right. Dave says, I used to work for a large multinational in Limerick that banned smoking on its campus. One off-campus designated smoking area, 5 minute walk away at least. Penalty for a breach was a written warning. And then one listener says, next thing to be banned will be our freedom. Ah, that must be a Trump supporter in Ireland anyway. 0874 100 102 is number for your comments. I wonder, Larissa, will our traffic congestion issues be dealt with now that Taoiseach Leo Varadkar is finding himself having a 75-minute commute to government buildings?
I know, we've all noticed this, I think. I was wondering what was happening in the last couple of months. I was thinking, why is every single time of the day, it's unbelievably hard to get around the city now, far more than normal. So it's not just us normal people that have noticed it. It's Joan Burton, who's brought it up in the Dáil, and she was critical of Shane Ross in relation to it. And the Taoiseach said, yes, I've empathy because I experience it myself. My commute this morning took me 75 minutes.
And apparently he was using the bus lanes because he has a Garda driver as Taoiseach. So he was able to zip along inside some of the traffic and he still got stuck for that amount of time.
I presume he's coming in from Castleknock or wherever. I'm trying to think how far he's coming from. But he's saying that it's not the Lewis. She says it's the Lewis works that are the problem. He's saying that it is people return to the good times. We're all back working and travelling again.
What's so good about having to spend? Now, I know there are lots of people who listen to us who spend a lot longer than 75 minutes commuting, but surely that should be about the outside of how long anyone should have to spend getting to or from work in a day.
Well, especially from Castleknock to government buildings anyway, that's for sure. I think it's hard to divorce the traffic problems from the stuff that's happened around College Green. Work in the area and you see it every morning, and some of the decisions you'd wonder, you know, what the planners were thinking of in relation to the way the traffic has been set up. And there was an issue as well with cyclists coming in on the Lewis track, and they've now actually tried to divert them across in front of opposite running traffic to cross the road to join a cycle lane that was only going in one direction but is now two-way. On Bachelor's Walk, there's now traffic lights before you even get to the main ones, so only one lane can move at a time to be able to reach the actual traffic lights at Bachelor's Walk. Like, it's absolute mayhem. And, you know, I know that they moved 17 bus routes or something like that away from College Green. It still doesn't seem to be getting any better.
Paddy has a suggestion of a ban. He wants to ban drinking on Good Friday. Let's move to the issue
of
black cats, which apparently large numbers of black cats have been abandoned in Britain because their owners don't regard them as bad luck, but say that they look bad in selfies.
Yeah, so the founder of a cat rescue shelter has said that they're being shunned because they don't show well. The Moggery is a place in Bristol, and the lady who runs it has been doing so for like 20 years now at this point. And actually, the problem's gotten so bad that she's decided to start offering free neutering for black cats to just curb the number of unwanted kittens.
Actually, the RSPCA in Britain actually encouraged that.
Yeah, so what she's saying is that on average, it takes at least 10 days longer to rehome a black or a black and white cat compared to a ginger or tabby one.
But Larissa, the idea, because you know people love putting up pictures of their pets on Instagram and Twitter and the rest of it, but the idea that they're abandoning, getting rid of their black cats because they don't photograph well?
I have to say, I don't buy that. I think that's a spin. She says here earlier on in the interview, she says that it's always been harder to rehome black cats. Now, I find that that's amazing. I didn't realise that. People generally prefer to go for the tabbies or the different coloured cats. They don't like black cats. I love black cats. They're gorgeous, and they're like the Sabrina the Teenage Witch had a talking black cat. I mean, who doesn't like black cats? But apparently everyone puts cats in their selfies and now they don't want black cats. I don't know. I think that's a spin to get attention on unwanted cats, and cat rescue, they need all the attention they can get, so that's a good thing.
Okay, Orla, who describes herself as very tired, has just texted in to say she commutes 1.5 to 2 hours each way every day. The volume of traffic has increased massively. Well, Orla, I hope we have lots on the programme to keep you entertained on your way. I want to ask you, Larissa, about a story from Britain. We're going to be lots of these damn wedding stories this year because Prince Harry is marrying the actress Marissa Markle. That's her name, isn't
Marissa,
it?
Meghan Markle.
Meghan Markle, sorry. She, and this apparently is an issue, she's going to make a speech at her wedding reception. So what?
I know, Meghan made the up name Markle. Apparently, this is not that unusual at all. It happens quite a lot. But, it's being spun as some kind of brilliant feminist statement, which I think is frankly hilarious to think that you'll walk into the most patriarchal institution, between church and state, and walk up the aisle in a frilly white virginal coloured dress and accept it when a priest or whatever says, you may kiss the bride. And then say, I'm going to make this big feminist statement by making a speech at my own wedding. I mean, like, you've already signed up for the thing.
I presume it's at the reception afterwards. It's not actually at the ceremony in the church, is it?
No, it's after. It's at the reception where the
husband's done. But don't all brides make speeches now?
Not all. Unfortunately, I'm in that generation where we're going to weddings pretty much every second weekend. And
I'm not, unfortunately. My day is gone.
It's really bizarre, actually. And I do you know what? To be honest with you, there's so much faff around weddings that's completely nonsensical. Like, for instance, the cake no one eats the bloody thing in the end anyway. So I think as much as you want to change about the idea of a wedding, please change it because it's your day. Don't feel like you're conscribed to kind of particular norms. What was interesting from this story was that a YouGov poll found that only 16% of those surveyed thought the bride should give a speech at her wedding. I'm not sure if it's whether or not they just disagree with the bride giving a speech as the bride or whether they just don't like speeches at all, because I think a lot of people get fed up when it gets to the speeches point. Literally keep it to the point, I think, and as brief as possible is the main thing.
It is, but it's real shoot yourself in the foot feminism. I'll volunteer for this thing that's going to be a giant pain. It's going to be a real stress and I'm going to have to write it and it'll take me hours. Just sit back and let someone else do it. That'll be a nice statement.
Listener says, my wife made a speech at our wedding back in 2011. I didn't realise it was a big deal. Indeed. Another listener suggesting that if Leo Varadkar has to spend 75 minutes on his commute, he should perhaps get up a little bit earlier in the morning. What's this about Alexa, the generation that's growing up with Alexa learning bad manners?
Yeah, so this is new figures from a survey that show that 42% of children aged between 9 and 16 use voice recognition gadgets in the home. So those are things like Apple Siri and Alexa. And so you can bark orders at these things and they do certain things for you, like looking up facts or telling you the time or what the weather is like outside. So the researchers at Childwise think that this is going to be dramatically formative in the growth of children. It's going to change the way they ask for things, and they're going to all be barking orders instead of saying please and thank you for things. To be honest with you, I dug deeper and there's absolutely no basis for the assumption from what the research is saying anyway. They're just making this assumption, pretty much like the RSPCA probably, just trying to get coverage and spin and PR. But I mean, to be honest with you, I think it's a whole load of nonsense. You know, if children are going to have good manners, they're going to have good manners. They don't just solely exist in a vacuum at home with Alexas and Siris. They go out in the real world and their parents do say please or thank you. And if they're not going to be saying please or thank you in the real world, they're certainly not going to be saying it to Alexa or Siri.
Last word to you in this, Larissa?
I think I'm the Siri assistant in my home. We don't need any technology. I just get orders barked at me.
Larissa Nolan, Ian Power from spunout.ie, thank you both very much for joining us here on The Last Word on Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.